From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Tuesday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Parham, Neil McCready, coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio this morning. Today, we're going to talk with Chris Clark. Gamecock Central, Ole Miss, and South Carolina will meet at Founders Park. I can't keep forgetting their stadium name now. Sarge Fry has been going for a while. At Founders this weekend, Friday to Sunday are the dates for that. Carolina playing pretty well lately. They are surging a bit. Up to the top 45 or so in RPI. So we'll talk to Chris about probably baseball, football, maybe a little basketball as well coming up here in 20 minutes or so on the podcast. The podcast is brought to you every single day by the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford. Go get a daiquiri, temperature up around 80 today. Be a great afternoon to stop in, try one of the six flavors. Get a daiquiri for as little as $3 or go as high as 44 ounces for your daiquiri if you are so choosing. Might get a brain freeze, but not the worst type of brain freeze, I guess, if you are so inclined. So get that, get the 49-cent bottomless refills, lunch specials, ribs at night, and more with the Blue Sky and Oxford Exxon, and we're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio.
We are. Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900 is the number. Call that number, ask for Corey Clark, tell Corey what new Ford you are looking for, and then he will send you a quote within 15 minutes and business hours. It's real simple. It's no haggling. It's right to the bottom line. You tell him what you're looking for, he sends you a quote, and then it's up to you. You can shop that quote around if you'd like. Certainly you're right. Or you can go ahead and let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many other listeners of the podcast and for yours truly. And that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. Get a great new Ford product. You get great service after the sale. Delivery options, everything you might be looking for with no hassle, no haggling. Just a real easy way to make your automotive purchase. We'll make it even better. Mention any of our podcasts when you talk to Corey. Say, hey, I heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900.
I saw your Twitter this morning. Kind of made me laugh. Campbell's birthday. She asked you, you actually talk and make that your living.
Yeah, we were, I guess we were going on our way back from Ruston, maybe. I don't know. It all sort of runs together. And so she was like, so you do this podcast with Mr. J? And I said, yeah. She said, what do y'all talk about? I said, stuff. And so I said, you want to hear it? And she's kind of reluctantly, hesitantly, sort of inquisitively said, yeah.
Not 100% sure she wants to hear it. Yeah.
And so she listened to it. Sort of baffled by it. She's like, so they just pay you to talk about stuff? Yeah.
I get the confusion.
I mean, I do too. I said, see, anything's possible in America, baby. Dream big, and if it doesn't work out, you can just talk about stuff. Yeah. And so she proceeded to tell me about people who make hundreds of thousands of dollars a year on YouTube.
Yeah.
To which I was like, so
the dude that plays video games and makes $200,000 a month?
Yeah. So I was like, so they pay him to just do stuff? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, see, our worlds are more similar than you think.
I have caught myself listening most of the time. And while I completely knew the product, I will say that I was listening the other day to the latest show, and it did increase my desire to get some honeysuckle cathead simply, but, you know, the weather was warming up.
And I know.
I think I actually introduced the drink to you, but something in my head was like, hey, it's kind of that season again, if you will.
I've put the cocktail together for you before, and it's very enjoyable, especially. The people at Cathead might not like me saying this.
Okay.
But as it gets warmer, I swear to God, it gets better. Even though it's the same drink.
You think so?
To me. I should preface it for
What do you think is the reasoning or the purpose?
I'm sure it's something in the brain. Like,
oh, sorry, you mean the temperature?
Yeah.
Why would that bother Cathead?
Well, because they'd probably like for you to drink it even when it's 19 degrees outside.
Oh, see, I thought you meant literally as the drink was warming and the ice started to melt or something.
No,
and I'm like,
no.
Hold on a minute. Like,
No. But when it's warm, I should say that you're fine. When it's warmer outside.
Well, no, there is
that
something.
Drink's just better.
It's one of the refreshing drinks. I mean, there are certain drinks that are warm versus cold. There's no doubt about that, temperature
yeah,
wise.
For
I
sure.
mean, you know, you're not as likely to have a hot toddy on July 30th. I mean,
no, that would be awful, in fact.
I mean, you know, I pretty much drink bourbon year round, but
yes.
from a cocktail standpoint of what I want at dinner or happy hour or in the middle of the day after a golf round, that's going to change depending on what the month is. There's no doubt about that. I'm not going to touch a beer if it's not spring or summer because I'm not a beer guy.
Yeah, and I'll drink a different beer in December than I drink in June.
Yeah, you're not hitting the Citradelic in November.
No,
I mean,
no, God. Well, I'll give you an example. I got one of those 30A Beach Blonde Ales.
I saw. Yeah.
Because sometimes, and it's on a sunny day, it's just better than it would be in December when I think I would hate it.
What made you try it?
It was on draft at Lost Pizza Company. You should advertise, by the way, Lost Pizza Company, if you'd like to get in touch
with
them.
You mentioned them a lot.
I'll drop Carson off at soccer, and I'm like, okay, I could sit here for an hour and a half, or I could go have a beer. Yeah. Easy call.
Yeah, go ahead.
And they had it on draft, and I was like, eh. As a customer, I'm typically a great customer. I'm going to tip extremely well, and I don't want to bother you. And she was kind of standing there.
You would
kind of
like a game on in front of you.
Yeah, and the game was, it was a basketball game. It was Cleveland and Indiana. It was one of those games. And I was like, I'll just try that.
Sure.
Whatever.
And it was fine.
Because I think what I wanted, she's like, we just ran out. I was like, no big deal. Just, I'll have that.
Was it as good out of the bottle as the draft?
Well, it never is. That's a rule.
Right.
But it was good enough.
Okay.
I always pour it into a glass.
Yeah, you're a glass guy.
It makes it feel like it's draft.
You're trying to trick your brain.
Yes.
Okay.
My brain's easily tricked. I mean, I'm not Bill Gates here. You know what I mean? I mean, it's pretty easy to trick the...
Is Jay just drinking it straight still?
Yeah. So we're on... Here's the funny part. And for me, it used to be unnerving, and now I just laugh at it. We're on Skype where we can see each other.
Oh, y'all do the video.
Well, so that we can signal to each other, hey, I got something.
It bothers me. I get worried about internet connections with the video. Is the reason we don't do it more because it takes up so much more bandwidth.
Yeah.
I get a little uneasy when we have video.
And I understand that. And frankly, it messes up with our connection a little bit. But he wants to do it that way, and I'm fine. Whatever.
Yeah, he always has his video on. I can always see him when we call him for this show, too. He's a big video guy.
And so I'll be talking, and all of a sudden, I see the bottle upturned. It's honeysuckle, and I always think, we're 10 minutes into the show. We got another 50 minutes to go because we tried to go an hour.
Yeah, he cracks me up. I don't know, like, because, you know, a lot of people could do it and I would get bothered. Like, he brings up my eye malady about once a week, and he would think it would kind of bother me, but when Jay does it, I go, okay, yeah. Because he can just do that, hey, now, one time, and I start laughing.
Yeah, yeah.
I go, all right, fine.
Yeah.
It's Jay. It's cool. It's fine. So
we were sitting there on the last show literally just comparing our physical weaknesses, his cross-eyedness and my baldness. And
I think he's trying to bring me to his level. Mine is not as bad as his.
No, his is more extreme than yours.
Yeah, it is. Mine gets worse as I get tired or sick. As I told Jay on Twitter the day, you normally see me early in the morning, and it's not really that noticeable in the morning. It gets much worse as the day goes on.
Well, I have officially hit that age where as the day wears on, I can't see as well. Like, I heard Ryan Seacrest, who I think is roughly my age and looks 20 years younger than me.
Yeah.
He was hosting the, like, Grammys or Oscars or some whatever he hosts. And they did it in New York this time. And he's been always did it in California before. And, of course, there's a three-hour difference from New York to Los Angeles. And so he was taping it in New York, and it was at night, and he had to wear his glasses because all these people were like, I love your glasses. And he's like, well, it wasn't really a fashion thing. It was late in the day, and I can't see enough to read. I'm there. Like, I told Campbell the other day when we were going to Arkansas, she couldn't miss chemistry class or whatever. And I said, well, look, here's the deal. I'm going to level with you. We need to get there before dark. Whatever that means, whatever that entails, because I can't see well enough anymore at night to drive in an unfamiliar place. I can drive around Oxford at night because I know where I'm going. I mean, I've driven to Kroger so many times, I think I could do it blind. But whipping around Fayetteville when you're having to rely on Siri to give you directions where to turn left and right is, I would prefer to do that in the daytime.
It's rain that bothers me. It's not really night, but rain. I'm in trouble.
Or rain at night, I'm shutting down. Nope.
Even when in Oxford, where I know where I'm going, I have sometimes a hard time raining and at night to kind of focus in on.
And you're young for that, so you might as well start investing in some good bifocals, big fella.
I've had four eye surgeries.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm much more advanced from an eye problem standpoint. I mean, that's like, you know, to Jay's point, I mean, late in baseball games when I'll do those three outs videos, I'll open up my computer and turn the thing on, and I'll kind of notice it, and I'll close my eyes for a second, and I can kind of make it go away, but I have to kind of look at I look in the screen and go, whoa, and then I have to stop it. So it is what it is. It's fine. Everybody got something.
Everybody's got their own thing.
Yeah. I have hair. I'm probably going to keep my hair, I think.
It appears likely.
Yeah. I mean, I'm almost.
Or that if you lose it, by the time you lose it, it truly won't matter.
Yeah.
That's the great thing about now. It no longer really matters that I'm bald.
I mean, because I'm almost 35 and I have no receding hairline whatsoever.
You're probably in really good shape. It's a lot different at 48 than it was at 20.
Is that paternal or maternal?
Maternal.
So I have no idea. Okay. So I don't know. My mother was adopted, so
okay.
I don't know.
My mom's brother and dad were bald.
Okay. Because my father's side of the family has like lush hair, but obviously that has no bearing on anything.
Well, and both of my brothers have full heads of hair, and some of that is chemical. They've kept the pharmaceutical people in business all these over the years.
Did you ever think about that?
Oh, yeah, but it was too late by then.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Had you called it, would you have?
I don't think it would have mattered. Like, I don't think that stuff solves it for someone like me who just, it's gone.
Like, you never thought, hey, let me put hair plugs all throughout my head.
Well, if I'd had the money, maybe.
Okay, that's
fair.
Yeah.
But no, not
they like, don't give you the hair plugs.
No, not like now. I mean, whatever.
Yeah, like you can't. There'd be no way for you to come out next week and have a toupee on and be like, "Hey."
Well, I mean, my deal, like Ryan Sandberg, was bald and he did the hair plug thing, and he looks good. Brian Urlacher did the same thing because when you're in Chicago, you see the billboards everywhere. So, I mean, I would do it, but the money that it would cost is like, yeah, what's the point?
Yeah,
I mean, I wouldn't be embarrassed of having a head of hair now, but like if the hair gods came down right now and said, "Hey, you want a head of hair?" I would say, "What's it going to look like?"
You think there are hair gods?
Well, they have football gods. Why would there not be some hair gods? I'm totally kidding, everybody. Do not freak out. I'm joking around. I know there are no hair gods. There are football gods, no hair gods. I understand. But if I was, by hypothetical hair gods, offered a full head of hair, I would actually ask a question.
Is college football god and pro football god the same god or they're different gods?
No, they're the same gods.
Same gods. Football, just football.
They're the football gods.
Okay.
Probably have some hierarchy, but yes, they have football.
So they have a say over that Winona Biggersville High School game, too.
Absolutely.
Okay. Just wondering.
Just don't put as much emphasis as they do on that as, say, Bears Packers.
Interns handle things along those lines.
I mean, yeah, I would think. Okay. I would think you don't just emerge as the head football god. You have to work your way up the ladder a little.
So it's not it's not like the Chinese Empire or something where you just were born into it.
I'm going to guess no.
Yeah.
But I've never been able to get
no
that
King
far.
Tut situation.
I wouldn't think.
Okay.
I wouldn't think so.
We'll actually talk about some sports in a minute with Chris Clark. Before we do that, I will tell you the podcast is brought to you in part by Brandon White at Keys to Dream Travel, completely free service specializing in Disney World and Disney Cruise Line vacations, taking the stress out of planning, taking care of dining and fast pass reservations, transportation, anything else related to your vacation. An expert in getting you out of line and onto more rides, no matter the crowds. Get a $25 Disney gift card for booking a vacation. And contact him for a free, no-obligation quote at brandon@keystodreamtravel.com or 901-634-8687. And don't forget to ask about the free dining possibilities, depending on when you're booking your trip.
Speaking of cold beer and honeysuckle vodka and things of that nature, it won't be long until football season and tailgating in the Grove, and you want to make sure that you use 7 South Tailgating. So look, here's the deal. Some of you say, well, I just come up once a year. Okay. And some people say, I go every game. Okay. Some people are in between. Whatever, whether it's the whole season, whether it's just the SEC games, whether you just come up once a season, that's cool. Get in touch with 7 South Tailgating. They're celebrating 10 years of business this season. If you try 7 South once, you'll never tailgate without them again. They can set up your personal gear, or you can rent everything from them. You're flying in from Wisconsin one time. Don't bring your gear. Just rent from 7 South. No one will match their customer service, their attention to detail. It's 7SouthTailgating.com. Podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. Right now, OUB is offering one-year CDs at 1.75% annual percentage yield, three-year triple option CDs paying 2.01% APY. With the three-year term, customers can deposit once during the term, withdraw once during the term, and or bump the rate if OUB's three-year rate rises. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. Rebel Nation, 2018 is the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com. and updated often, so be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com. Ole Miss and Auburn starting next Thursday. That's May the 10th. It's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series out at Swayze. Tickets available at olemisstix.com. That's olemisstix.com. If you live in or around Jackson and you can't make it up to Swayze for the Thursday night game, come out and join Jay Tate and myself at Cathead Distilleries in Jackson. We're going to podcast the greatest pod in the South around 5 p.m. It'll last about an hour, which will conveniently take you up to first pitch for, if everything goes as scheduled. Auburn and Ole Miss at 6 o'clock. We'll have a watch party there at Cathead. So come out, visit with us, listen to the podcast, and then enjoy Auburn and Ole Miss baseball at Cathead Distillery.
Now Chris Clark on the Billy's Pecans Hotline. Welcome to the show. Thanks for taking some time with us this morning. We'll jump into a little baseball. Ole Miss in Columbia this weekend. A couple of pretty good weeks for the Gamecocks. I'm sure that fan base was handling things exceptionally well prior to the little bit of a run right there.
Oh, yes, of course. It was all smiles in Columbia. No, I mean, they there was a lot of frustration. You know, last season was such a big disappointment for South Carolina, really. There's some disappointment for a lot of the Chad Holbrook era. And, you know, people were hoping that Mark Kingston could turn things around. And you guys know sort of the microwave society nature of how things go, whether it's football, baseball, any sport in college athletics or pro athletics is, you know, it's sort of win now or else. And so things had gotten off to a slow start, a frustrating start, and people were upset. But it just goes to show, I mean, baseball's a long season. You know, for the Gamecocks, I think there were a couple things that really hurt them early on. Number one, the schedule is exceptionally difficult. When you look at some of the teams they played, you know, you play Clemson, who's a top 10 team. You play Florida, who's been the number one team in the country, and have a chance to win both of those series. I mean, you're a runaway in both of those series. It's not like they were getting pummeled. You know, you play Arkansas. You look at the rest of the schedule this season, that's difficult. LSU at home, top 20 team. Vanderbilt on the road. So a lot of difficulties. That played into it. That's going to be the case every year when you play in the SEC. But on top of that, you've also got the fact that they're missing some of their key guys. I mean, Noah Campbell, who's a freshman, was out for a while. Madison Stokes was out for a while. TJ Hopkins out for a while. It's two of their best hitters. You know, you're shuffling guys all over the place. Even a guy like Justin Rowe, who has played multiple spots in the infield, was banged up while he was playing. You got Chris Cullen moving from catcher to third base. A lot of just unconventional, you know, moves that they had to do during that time. Now they got everybody back healthy. And I think we've seen that that's clearly made a difference for them with a full-strength lineup.
Is there an aspect of the team that's just playing better or is kind of the key for it? Or is it just simply what you mentioned and getting guys back? I mean, what's been the difference the last 2 or 3 weeks?
Yeah, it's been interesting because there hasn't been one exact prescription for turning it around all the time. I mean, clearly, getting a guy like Noah Campbell while he's a freshman and isn't setting the world on fire with his numbers, he can get on base. He had a huge two-out, run-scoring hit to help to turn things around in one of the Vanderbilt games this weekend. He's got speed on the base pass, and then Stokes and Campbell. And being able to just play guys in their normal position defensively and be healthy, I think it's been big. They've had several come from behind wins. You know, you look at the LSU series, you look at the Vanderbilt series, happened in both of those. I mean, they got down by three runs in back-to-back innings against Vandy and answered the bell, and then were able to get, on top by a run and let two guys on base in the bottom ninth, and Graham Lawson comes in and shuts it down with a couple strikeouts and a ground out. So when the starting pitching has let them down a bit, as it did against Vandy, it's been the hitting in the bullpen. When the hitting hasn't quite been there at times, the pitching stepped up the starters, and so they've been there to pick each other up a little bit. And I think that's just what you see from a full strength team. This is a better team than they played. And look, baseball is a close game, but they were so close early in the season, against Florida, against Clemson, when they were a little bit more full strength, and now they're just playing better baseball. I just think they're hitting their stride a little bit. And so I'm sure around the program, the hope is that they can continue that.
It's also obviously South Carolina, a perennially capable program to do whatever at the national level, but was the Holbrook era doomed the entire time just because he replaced Ray Tanner and that was an expectation that couldn't be met?
I don't know if I really subscribe to, the fact that you can't follow a legend and have success. I mean, there have been a lot of, cases where that has happened, where it's been difficult. But there's also been cases where it's worked out just fine. Heck, here at South Carolina in football, Lou Holtz is a legendary coach, and things didn't really end there well at the end of the process, although he took South Carolina to some new heights. Then Steve Spurrier comes along. He's another legend. So it's not quite the same as Chad Holbrook following Ray Tanner, obviously, but Spurrier comes in and does some really nice things, and then his tenure doesn't end well. Will Muschamp takes over and is engineering a turnaround, but we'll see how it ultimately turns out. But the early returns have been very good there. So I think it just had more to do with, where do you take the program once you do get the keys? And for Holbrook, I mean, look, he recruited some talent to Columbia. Obviously, you look at some of the guys that were selected in the draft and what they're doing in the majors. He is a capable recruiter, obviously. And South Carolina had some high water marks when he was in Columbia. There were just some missteps and mistakes, and I think the results at the end of the day were just not good enough to sustain him remaining the head coach. I mean, obviously at South Carolina, it's a championship-winning program. They have a stellar track record, and the expectations are huge. And so, you always look at – I know Ray Tanner had to take a look at the program and decide, what kind of course is it on? And not even about just the wins and losses that season or even a cumulative total, but what does the outlook of the program look like? How is it being managed? What's the recruiting look like? What do things look like from the top down? And the decision was that a change needed to be made. And Mark Kingston is a different type of coach than Holbrook. With just how he operates the program. And quite frankly, that's probably what was needed. They just sort of needed a change. Even some of the players have alluded to it. LT Tolbert's had some very telling comments during the course of the season about how in the past, in some of the games that South Carolina got down, they probably would have folded their tent up. And they've had some comebacks, even ones they've fallen short in, when they've just kept battling this season. And that's sort of that blue-collar mentality that some of those great Gamecock baseball teams were known for. I think fans have sort of come to appreciate that about this team as well.
Is Tanner around the program more than a typical AD would be, or is he keep his distance?
I'd say it's a little in between. I mean, you've heard stories about whether or not it's true. I remember one of the stories at Florida was how Jeremy Foley would supposedly come in and watch film and things like that. And I don't really know. I mean, different people you talk to down there say say different things, but he certainly does not meddle in the program. He is a baseball coach. I mean, Ray Tanner goes to football practice a lot. He's at, you know, volleyball events. I mean, he does the typical AD thing. So he's not around the program any more than you would typically expect. He's an athletics director. He's got plenty on his plate. He hired a baseball coach to coach the team, and he's sort of said some things along those lines in interviews when he's been asked, you know, similar questions. Hey, you know, will you dispense advice? Will you be there? He said, you know, I'm here. You know, if anybody wants to reach out, but you know, you hire Mark Kingston to try to win games, and he's the head baseball coach. So I don't really get the sense that, and I certainly haven't heard that he's any more involved than you would anticipate. I mean, he loves being around baseball with his background. You know, the Founders Park, you know, when it was first built before it was renamed with the sponsorship, that was sort of Ray Tanner's baby. You know, he had wanted that new stadium for a long time, and they finally got it. So obviously he's going to want to be around the program a lot, and he wants that program to have a lot of success. It's certainly special to him.
Switch to football for a few minutes. In the fall, South Carolina will be in Oxford. They play November the 3rd, but prior to that, you get Georgia early in the annual game between the two programs. But after, I guess in the middle, there's a lot of winnable games there. Vanderbilt, Kentucky, Missouri, where the Gamecocks could get off to a pretty decent start, even with a loss to the Bulldogs.
Indeed. Yeah, you know, that you never want to say – I don't think we'll ever sit here and say South Carolina's schedule is easy. Maybe a good word is manageable, considering the roster they'll have returning and the teams that they play this year, just how things match up. I mean, you're catching Tennessee, certainly in the midst of a rebuild. Florida, I think, will be better on offense under Dan Mullen, but still has some question marks. Lost a lot of guys the past few seasons on defense. Will Muschamp recruited. You know, Chase, even that Georgia game early, you know, I think the pecking order that most people will pick, and I'll probably be among them, is Georgia number one in the East, and then sort of a battle for number two, where I think a lot of people actually pick South Carolina there. But that's an interesting game because it's at home for South Carolina. It's early, as you pointed out. I know Georgia's loaded with talent. I know they had a great recruiting class last year as well. But they lost a lot of guys. I mean, they lost a lot off of that national title, you know, runner-up team last season. And they'll still be really good, I think. But you look, even last season, South Carolina took a team to Athens. And if Nick Chubb, Kirby Smart even said this after, I mean, if Nick Chubb and Sony Michel weren't in that game, that may be a different story. They were really the difference in that game, and they're not around anymore. And they'll, of course, have, you know, another four-star and five-star running back that they'll just throw in there this year. But it is going to be interesting. I think that's going to be maybe the key game of the season. Now, for South Carolina, in my opinion, the key is to not slip up. You know, you lose to Kentucky last year, lost to Kentucky 3 years in a row. Can't happen this year.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
You know,
wow.
You got to go to Ole Miss and win this year. You got to take care of business in those games, and then you know, win a big one against Georgia. You know, if they play well and if this team stays healthy, that's really going to be a key. They can't sustain some losses at certain spots, at quarterback, at receiver, for example, defensive line, offensive line. They don't have a lot of depth at certain spots. But if they could stay healthy, play well, and get more out of the offense than they have the past couple of seasons, I mean, it's on the table that they could win 9 games again, that they could win 10 games. And if you steal one early against Georgia, then you maybe really have something going there. So there's certainly some difficult games on the schedule, but it sets up well for them to make a run considering what they've got returning and who they face.
Take a break in our talk with Chris. Tell you the podcast is brought to you in part by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape, 662-607-7773. Time to get those annual contracts signed. Let MasterCuts take care of your lawn all year long, whether it's pine straw, landscaping, or just the cut, the edging, and the weed eating necessary to keep you know, your yard not an embarrassment in the neighborhood. 662-607-7773 or MasterCutsLawn.com. And don't forget their pressure washing options, including free driveway and sidewalks pressure washing when you sign that annual contract.
Podcast also brought to you by Gambrell and Associates. Gambrell and Associates have three attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience and more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their website, msbnkr.com, or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. Gambrell and Associates handle Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando, 662-342-7700, or in Oxford at 662-281-8800. The podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're looking for a Nissan vehicle, that is the place to go. It's just off Interstate 55 in Grenada, Mississippi. They have a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. Go in, test drive one today, ask about their lease deals. Tell Gene and Sandy that you heard about Grenada Nissan on the podcast or at rebelgrove.com. You'll get rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. And we're brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based REMAX legacy realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market better. Go to his site. He'll prove it to you. HarryAlexander.com. Filter through by what you're looking for once you click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab up at the top left, and then send him an email. It's ha@harryalexander.com. Now back to Chris Clark on the Billy's Pecans Hotline on the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Is it fair for me to say, as you know, we cover the West more than we cover the East, obviously. I mean, obviously Georgia has emerged as the preeminent program in the East, at least based on just what it looks like they're doing on the recruiting trail. Is it safe to say that second place in the East is more up for grabs right now than it's been in decades?
Probably so. You know, the interesting thing looking back, we've looked back at some of the recent South Carolina teams, you know, and they made Atlanta once. They made it to Atlanta once during Spurrier's best run from 2010 to 2013. 2010 was a good football team that made it to Atlanta, ran into Cam Newton for the second time, and obviously we know what happened. 2011 through 2013, they went 33-6. 2012 was the best South Carolina football team of all time, in my opinion. They didn't even make it to Atlanta. The reason being, they had to play LSU at night, lost by two, I believe, and then they played a Muschamp Gators team during the day at Swamp. About half the team was sick. Florida did next to nothing on offense and won by 33 points because the defense was just completely dominant. So, I mean, it was sort of just a perfect storm for them. That 2012 defense, I mean, almost everybody on the team defensively, you know, made it to the league. It had guys like Clowney. They had Connor Shaw, you know, Marcus Lattimore. I mean, some really good players on that team. And even they didn't make it to Atlanta all the time. I mean, they were runner-up a few times. You know, I remember they beat Clemson at home in 2013, and on the Williams-Bice video board, they're playing a game with Texas A&M at Missouri and needed Johnny Football to come through and beat Missouri on the road to make it to Atlanta, and they couldn't. And so, you know, Missouri made it. So, you know, it is wide open because you've got so many rebuilds, you know, Florida, Tennessee, you know, Kentucky has given South Carolina a lot of problems, but most have put them down towards the bottom. You know, Vandy's there. Missouri will be interesting with Derek Dooley at the helm. Barry Odom, you know, has been there a while now, so they're continuing to build. I think South Carolina is probably going to be the, I guess you could say, trendy pick for second. And I think it's more open. It reminds me of that time period when South Carolina was really good under Spurrier, where, you know, Florida wasn't as good, Tennessee wasn't as good, Georgia was always good, but would sometimes, you know, slip up. Even, hey, that 2012 Georgia team that came up a few yards short against Alabama in the SEC title game got absolutely blasted by South Carolina that year at home. I mean, it wasn't even close. And so I think it's more wide open, similar to that. It sort of reminds me of that time period. And a lot of times during those years, we were saying, okay, South Carolina, Georgia is the key game. But even when South Carolina won some of those years, they would have a slip up. You know, 2011, I believe it was, they lost to an awful Auburn team. 2013, they lost to a bad Tennessee team. So that's why I said earlier, they have to, if they can get past Georgia, they got to make sure they don't slip up somewhere else.
You know, I covered Auburn for years, and obviously that Auburn-Alabama dynamic was such that if you let one program get ahead of you by much, everybody was getting fired. It was just, it was intolerable if you were in second in that deal. Given Clemson's success recently as a national power, how much pressure is there on Will, if at all, to kind of match that? Or is it because they're in different leagues, does that alleviate some of that?
Yeah, it is a different – that's a good point. It's a different dynamic because they're in different leagues. That's a game that you can still have great success within your program. You can win a championship and not have to win that game. And, I mean, look, we saw that last year in Alabama-Auburn, right, with the championship dynamics. But still, you can more easily win a conference championship without having to win that game. There's a lot of pressure because, look, South Carolina, I mean, they lost 56-7 first year. Last year, you know, it was a little closer, but not much closer. It just got away from them early. Clemson's a great football team. They have a great program right now. South Carolina was way behind when Will Muschamp arrived. I mean, way behind. You look at when you combine the youth and the lack of talent on the roster when Muschamp arrived, it was at near the bottom of the conference. I mean, in all seriousness. And certainly not at Clemson's level. And so there's always going to be pressure in that game. But I think what people have to understand is this is more of a long-term reclamation project. And you've already gone from 3 wins to 9 in 2 years. You go from 3 to 6 to 9. That's progress, any way you slice it. And so trying to catch up to Clemson, as good as they've been recently, they've won a national title. They played for another one. They made the playoff the other year, last year. And so it's not like you're just aspiring to be decent right now. You're trying to build your program up to where you can be that good. Here's an example I'll give that's actually within that same rivalry. South Carolina had a 5-game win streak over Clemson from 2009 to 2013. They won 5 in a row in that series and never been done before by South Carolina. And during that time, Clemson was good. They were good to really good. They were playing for ACC championships during that time. The difference was, during that time period, South Carolina was sort of behind the scenes, slipping in recruiting. Clemson was still a good program in their own conference. They were just losing sometimes some close games to South Carolina, who was just better at times. And they were just putting their head down and working and continuing to get better and eventually blossom into what we see now. That's what South Carolina has to do. And I remember, I mean, I'm from Anderson, which is 15 minutes away from Clemson. You know, talked to a lot of Clemson people. A lot of the Clemson people were eaten up by losing to South Carolina 5 times in a row for obvious reasons. Just hasn't happened a lot. You don't want to lose to your rival that many times. And so even in the midst of being a really good team and winning championships and competing on a national stage, you know, they were still upset by that. But what they did is they just continued to work and they turned it around and started having success, not only against South Carolina, but on a larger scale, you know, getting into the playoffs. So that's what South Carolina will have to do. And I think losing the way that South Carolina did that first year, it wasn't a good thing in and of itself, but I think it might have lit a fire, you know, in Columbia to understand once again how important it is and just really, I think, sparked how far behind South Carolina was. So, again, it's going to take time. You can't make it up in a year or two. That's not realistic. You can't do that anywhere. If Alabama had slipped to that point somehow, they couldn't make it up in a year or two. It's just not feasible because we've seen Clemson and Alabama have been competing neck and neck the past few years in recruiting, on the field, for championships. And so it'll just take a while. And that's what they have to do is just continue working and recruiting. And we know that Will Muschamp will recruit. I mean, that's something that he could definitely do, and he can develop players. And they have to figure out the offense, and that's something they're working on now.
Last thing, Jeremy Pruitt going to be a success or failure at Tennessee? You're closer to it than we are.
Oh, man. How about that? I man, it's going to be tough. I think it depends on how long they give him. Tennessee's obviously got a fan base that, you know, is extensive. But, you know, people've got to understand that it takes a while. Tennessee's behind from a roster standpoint. I don't know if anybody watched their spring game. It was a little rough.
Yeah, sorry, missed that.
Yeah, I had to do my hair that afternoon.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you guys had some better things to do, I understand. So, you know, they're just behind. I mean, they've got a lot to figure out. They got a lot of recruiting to do. And the landscape is such to where it's so competitive in recruiting. It's getting even more competitive in recruiting. You look at some of the guys that have been hired in the SEC and in the Southeast. I mean, it is just it's crazy how competitive recruiting is right now. I mean, there was a while where.
Wait a minute. You know, just stop. Stop. Time out. Are you telling me right here on this show that people are actually going to listen to? I know that's shocking, but they are. Are you going to tell me right now that young men all over this country are not going to just turn down every other offer to go to Knoxville and run through a T? I mean, seriously. I mean, stop spinning.
Well,
bow down to
not,
the greatness of Big Orange Nation and Jeremy Pruitt and just deal with it, man. Sorry.
You're right.
I know we're colleagues, but damn.
Yeah, it's just bad. No, I mean, I think the staff he assembled is an interesting staff. I think they missed out on a couple guys that they were going for that would have even helped their recruiting even more. But, I mean, look, that's bottom line, that's the biggest thing. That's the biggest thing is you've got to recruit. And I think he has experience doing that at Florida State and at Alabama. He knows how to run a recruiting operation. It's just going to take some time. I think it's going to be rough the first couple years. And Georgia's going to be good. Florida will get better. South Carolina's getting better. So, again, I think the conference is more wide open and it's going to continue getting stronger and more competitive.
I think they're in deep trouble.
I mean, what is our benchmark for success? You know, you mentioned success or failure. Is that Jeremy Pruitt wins the SEC within the next, I don't know, 3 to 4 years? Is it he's pretty good? You know, for me, I would guess Tennessee fans say, you know, we need a championship of some sort. You know, we need to make the playoff.
And Butch so Jones delivered championships.
Of life. Yeah, exactly.
Well, there you go. What's bigger than life?
Yeah, nothing. So, but, you know, Tennessee, they want to make it to Atlanta. They want to make the playoff. So if you're asking me, you know, will Tennessee make the playoff in the next 3 or 4 years, or will they win an SEC title? I don't think so.
No.
I really don't, not in the next few years. Now, if they give them enough time, maybe.
If they wait till Saban dies and maybe Georgia decides to leave the league, I like their chances. I mean, but as long as they've got to play, because I think South Carolina's passed them, Florida's going to pass them, Mullen's a good coach. Georgia's a national power, and they play Alabama every year. You walk into every season 0-4 in the league.
Yeah, I mean it's going to be really, really, really tough. You know, they're going to need some other programs to start slipping, and there's really not any indication that's going to happen right now. So I think he walked into a difficult situation. You know, Will Muschamp walked into South Carolina at, in my opinion, a more opportune time. It was a tough situation, but conference a little bit more open now with Jeremy Pruitt stepping into Tennessee. He's stepping in at the same time as Muschamp in year three. He's had a chance to get his feet underneath him. Like you said, Saban, you know, you got Auburn out there on the other side. Then you've got Florida with Mullen stepping in. Florida's got a more talented roster, and they're going to be better offensively than they have been the past few seasons. So it is a tougher situation that he walks into, and that's really what a lot of it's about, is what kind of situation are you stepping into, and when are you doing it, and how much time are you going to get to turn it around?
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate all the time, Chris. Kept you a little bit longer than I meant to, but we thank you, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, great talking to you guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks to Chris for joining us. Again, Ole Miss and South Carolina this weekend in Columbia. The podcast here in Oxford brought to you in part by Tyson Drugs. TysonDrugs.com is the website, or give them a call at 662-252-2321. They're in downtown Holly Springs. They've got a great website, great app, to make the prescription situation good for you, or just a local pharmacy for whatever your needs are. They're also now in Oxford as well. That is G&M Pharmacy on South Lamar. They deliver local in the Oxford area.
Chris Clark and all other guests join us on the Billy's Pecans Hotline. Billy's Pecans in Crenshaw, Mississippi. Let them handle all of your corporate gifting. A lot of you have done that. We really appreciate it. And I know Billy's Pecans does as well. They know the perfect crunch for every palate, whether it's a gift for a corporate client, presents for the staff, tokens of goodwill for a referral, whether it's 5 to 5,000 orders. They'll handle it all with expertise and excellence, all with their signature Southern style, and with items at every price point you simply can't choose wrong. Consider the assorted gift bags. That's 8 ounces each. Perfect little hostess or thank you gifts. The best-selling party trio, or the pecans and chocolate for an especially sweet gift. You can customize your packaging with your company or organization's logo affixed as a sticker to their round boxes so your brand is front of mind and their decadent flavors are there to back it up. It's billiespecans.com. That's B-I-L-L-I-E-S pecans.com or 1-800-624-7404.
Podcast also brought to you by Community Mortgage. Been telling you for a long time about their float down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get that lower rate. Also, a leader in condo financing and all underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You're getting local underwriting that understands your market. Big deal there. 662-234-2704 or JLO, J-L-O-W-E at communitymtg.com. We were ahead of the curve, Neil, a couple days, or actually months. We've been talking about Ed Orgeron and his failure at LSU.
Yes.
All media jumping on that bandwagon in the last 24 hours or so.
All the big accredited media jumping in
Missouri
on that
media.
Now. Yeah.
Got diplomas hanging, not Gabe, the Missouri media.
Yes. Their schedule's brutal. It's set up for disaster.
Clay Travis yesterday talking to SEC Country. There's two different sides of the token. Pumping up three potential replacements for Ed Orgeron already, and he's going to harp on this all year is the reason I kind of bring it up, because we're going to continue to hear about this.
Because I was getting ready to ask you this very question, so go ahead.
Okay. He has three names. You know who they are, I'm assuming?
Well, I'm going to say one is Hugh Freeze,
yes. The other ones are Bobby Petrino and Lane Kiffin.
Okay.
Those are his three choices for LSU head coach, because he says that Ed's on the chopping block because the gap between LSU and Alabama will continue to separate, and that's what at least currently LSU fans measure themselves by.
I am a Louisiana native.
You are.
I understand the state.
You were born in Selma. You're an Alabama native.
But I grew up in Louisiana.
You're a Louisiana product. You're an Alabama native.
Fair enough. I'm a product of Louisiana. I grew up an Alabama fan. I know LSU pretty well. I know all of the media there pretty well.
You do.
I covered LSU a good bit when I was in Mobile.
You did.
Hugh Freeze would not survive at LSU.
From a media standpoint.
The media and the fans would kill him. He cannot handle that job. He's too thin-skinned. You can't handle it.
It's an aggressive, sarcastic media group.
They're going to make fun of him. They're going to make fun of him when he tweets the Bible verses. It is not a Baptist part of the country. And there's nothing wrong with being Baptist or Methodist or anything like that, but that is a different culture down there. Not bad, not better. I want to make that perfectly clear. Different. They'll kill him. And I don't think Hugh can stop. His Twitter, judging by his Twitter, he can't stop. He's going to do that, and that is not going to be effective in that environment. It's not. And when they lose, and they will, and when they run goofy-ass fourth down plays that don't work, when they lose recruiting battles to Nick Saban, he's going to get beat up.
Well, he's not going to be the coach. It just doesn't really matter. But
now, Lane Kiffin, all the sense in the world. Perfect fit.
You think Lane's a good fit in Baton Rouge?
No, I don't think he's a good fit. I think he's a perfect fit. He has the personality.
But are you not – you're kind of on the boat now that Lane would be a perfect fit at 120 of the 124 jobs.
Oh, I think he'd be a perfect fit at a lot of places. But down there, I actually think his personality would play into that job.
Who's Lane the head coach when he's not winning at a high level, though? What's that look like?
I don't know. In the past, it was kind of sensitive.
Yeah.
I think he's changed. He's going to play on Twitter.
He's going to play on Twitter.
But in a fun way. LSU people are going
even to... Even a self-deprecating way.
Yeah, it's, and they're going to like that. They liked... What did they like about Les Miles? Eccentric. Yeah. The stupid hat, ate grass, said funny stuff, and they liked him. Hell, they loved him, and he didn't ever really win all that big after the beginning.
Yeah.
Kiffin's a hell of an offensive coach, guys. Knows a lot of people. He's kind of endured a lot of things. They will look over the stuff in his past because he's going to make fun of himself. Good fit. Petrino, I don't know. Petrino's a hell of a football coach.
He is a heck of a football coach.
He's probably a guy that would fit anywhere. And Petrino at LSU probably would send some shockwaves through the rest of the league.
LSU's the place he'd fit a little bit because he's pretty dang slimy. There's some places where it'd be tough to
And they
tolerate.
Don't care.
No.
And again, I want to make sure I'm perfectly clear on this. I'm not criticizing anyone's religion. And you know me well enough to know I don't do that. Whatever. But it's different down there. And the stuff that he did here on Twitter and all that stuff, with it won't work down there. The media will kill him there. And if he thinks people like me are negative, radio shows down there that will get after you in Baton Rouge. Radio shows in New Orleans that will make you sport. And I don't think he can handle it. I think he has his ears would be too stretched out. He'd be listening to everything.
Speaking of radio, congratulations to Jeffrey and Jeff. I saw they topped the Memphis market yesterday in a story Jeffrey tweeted out.
I saw that.
He was patting himself on the back a little bit.
I don't blame him. Blame him a bit. It's competitive.
I mean, if you're not celebrating yourself, who is? I mean, you know, it's never a bad thing when you have that level of success to point it out publicly to somebody. Hey, look, Chief. And in radio, there's going to be a number at the end of the month.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a pretty direct deal. So, what do you think?
I'm happy for him.
Number doesn't always matter, Neil, is what you're saying?
Not always.
The number that mattered was 6.
I know some numbers that didn't matter.
Yeah.
Because I beat somebody that's now making $1 million a year.
Dan Wolkin now with his hot take of the day. He's not real sure LSU can get to 8 wins this season. So
I thought he was. I thought
it'd be a mild upset.
Mild upset.
Yeah, because they've got 6 sure and likely wins, including Ole Miss and State. Because I'm not real sure how those become likely. But
how is either one of those?
Look, State beat the hell out of LSU last year and has more people back.
Look, Mississippi State has a legitimate shot to be the 3rd best team in the league. This year, not program. I think State's going to fall off. I don't think he's a particularly good fit. That being said, this is a really talented team. And if you can't see that, your red and blue glasses are thick. You want to compare programs? Okay. Compare teams. LSU, I mean, Mississippi State has a chance to be the third, a legitimate chance to be the 3rd best team in the SEC this year. Giving LSU a win in that game is ludicrous. And frankly, if Ole Miss can – and this is an if. It's an if now. If Ole Miss can find a modicum of defense, game in Baton Rouge is a toss-up.
They don't have a quarterback or a running back right now.
Yeah. Those are important positions in football.
Those matter typically.
I have found that quarterback matters.
But my point being in that, look, Ole Miss is going to score some points offensively. They just are. Defensively, if you don't have a quarterback and you don't have a running back, well, suddenly it's not as big of a deal and the biggest mismatch here. Isn't complicated.
It's a toss-up right now. If you were to tell me, hey, Ole Miss wins in Baton Rouge, I don't go, oh, my God, really? Now, you tell me Ole Miss beats Alabama, and I'm like, oh, my God, what happened? Holy.
Yeah.
But you tell me – and the flip side, if you tell me LSU beats Ole Miss in Oxford, I'm not surprised. Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, sure. It's a toss-up. I'm going to be honest with you.
It's Baton Rouge, but
whatever. If you tell me LSU beats Mississippi State, I'm like, oh, my God, really? That's right.
Oh, it's that strong.
Yes.
Okay.
Mississippi State's a better football team than LSU next year. State's got a bunch of dudes back on defense. And the quarterback's a good – he's a good quarterback. He is.
This all started because Feinbaum yesterday said, quote, Ed Orgeron knows that if they don't win nine games, his job is on the line.
Well, then his job's on the line because they're not winning nine games.
Because Dan had on six wins off the top with C-Law, La Tech, Ole Miss State, Arkansas, and Rice.
He's literally giving them four games that I'm not comfortable giving them.
La Tech, Ole Miss State, and Arkansas.
Yes.
And then he says two likely losses, Auburn and Bama.
Not likely losses, losses.
And then he says they need to go 2-2 against Miami, Florida, Georgia, and A&M. He's not giving them a loss against Georgia.
Good luck.
At Georgia, not a loss for LSU? Oh, my God.
How do you say a smiley face emoji? Do you just say smiley face emoji?
You want to say that?
I just want to say that. I don't know why. I just started thinking about emojis. And John Curry.
Yeah. Where's John these days? He's getting paid a lot of money to not be an AD.
Yeah. He's probably working on his smiley face game.
We need some of those athletic administration contracts. I like those.
Those are good.
Need some of those.
I couldn't work that into contract negotiations.
Couldn't get that. So, look, if you fire me, I'm going to need seven figures. I don't know. I'm just saying that's kind of where we are right now.
So, here's what I'm thinking. We sign like a seven-year deal. You fire me in 6 months and pay me for the rest of the 7 years.
Capiche?
Sound good? Because I'm in.
Oh, God. I don't know. I saw the LSU train moving yesterday, and it caught my eye.
I think there's a tendency in media.
I haven't traveled a lot the last couple of years. I kind of want to go down there this year just to see the train wreck in person.
Oh.
I have a desire to go to Baton Rouge.
Sure.
This fall. Haven't been in a little while. Yeah. I don't want to see it this time.
Yeah. It's a great place to go to a game, too.
I like it.
It's a great place to go to a game.
Food's pretty good. There's beer.
Food's
around,
great. So. Michael Bennett's one of the best SIDs around. They run a great job. They run a fantastic press box. Although I always get in trouble in their press box. Because of the damn Cubs.
Because they're always playing around the time that Ole Miss heads down there.
The Cubs clinched the pennant.
Yeah, I remember.
The night that I was in Tiger Stadiums and Kent Lowe yelled at me.
Kent Lowe yelled at you?
Yeah.
I didn't think he's a yeller.
Got yelled at me. Well, it wasn't alone. It wasn't just me. It was several of us. Cubs turned a double play to get out of some trouble in the seventh or eighth inning, and we were all like, yes! And I guess he thought we were yesing the Ole Miss LSU game, which was in the first half at that point. And I had already made up my mind, I'm not going to watch the first half. I'll just watch the second half. I'll figure it out. Because quite frankly, I'm good enough as a writer to do that.
Well, and you've yelled at LSU kids in the press box for during LSU
games. But they were cheering the game.
You don't know they weren't watching something on their laptop?
Pretty positive.
I'm pretty positive, too. Wasn't like a Mashick level gripe at him, but you were.
I was just kind of.
You were stern.
Chill.
You were stern.
You can't cheer the game that you're watching in the press box.
You were stern. The American Football Writers Association tells you that, or National Football Writers Association. Sorry. We get that warning before every game. It's never enforced.
Never. And I'm always the one that goes, and it won't be enforced.
Yes.
We're gonna say this, but it's not real.
Except for Marcello wanting the scout kicked out last year in the Auburn Ole Miss game.
And then accusing us all of cheering.
Yes.
When I was watching Game 4 of the World Series.
There you go. See? Common thread. All right, we're going to close here. I don't know these players, but I'm assuming that you will, or I know you will. And I'm assuming some of our fans or some of our listeners will care. I don't know that we have fans. Some of our listeners will care.
You don't think we have fans?
I guess we have fans. That's, I don't know. I mean, whatever.
I don't know that I have fans. I think we have listeners.
Yeah, fans is
probably
too strong.
It's a stronger
term.
Yeah, that's probably overly ambitious.
Jason McIntyre, who is a clickbait artist. I have argued with him about things on Twitter before and wasted my nights. I don't know why, but for some reason he's one of the ones that I respond to. Dumbly a lot of the time.
Different people push buttons.
Yeah, for some reason he's a button pusher for me. But yeah. I see this morning, I want to see if he pushes your buttons with this.
Okay.
He's got a story up on The Big Lead, which has been a very successful blog for a long time.
Yes.
The Thunder can't win with Russell Westbrook.
Oh, God.
Here's what they should do. The best trade for him was to trade Russell.
Oh, God.
Okay. Would you like to say anything before I go into this? Give you a second to prepare?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. Well, I'm in on your computer.
The revisionist history. Oh, yes, I will.
Okay. I haven't even told you the players. I might be giving you seven all-stars in
this. I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to tell you about a couple of sponsors of our fine program, and then I'll let you do your thing.
Okay.
There is a revisionist history in NBA media that is simply unfair. One, the Thunder had no way to know that the league was going to have, and you won't know what I'm talking about. People who do will. They had no way to know that the league was going to have the salary cap bump that it had with no smoothing. The Thunder believed, because the league had told the clubs in the league that there was going to be a stretching apparatus called smoothing that would change the way that people structured contracts.
Okay.
The Thunder had this young nucleus of players, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, Serge Ibaka, and of course James Harden, that they were trying to figure out a way to hold on to all of them. They signed Kevin Durant to a max deal, and then they got Russell Westbrook to take less than the max. They got Serge Ibaka, who at the time appeared to be an emerging star, to take less than the max. They offered James Harden just under the max. James Harden, who's a great player, is going to win the MVP, should win the MVP, and might very well win his first title this year. Two things. One, he wanted the max. Three things. Two, he wanted to play another season in Oklahoma City and go into free agency as an unrestricted free agent. And three, he wanted to be his own guy. He didn't want to share the ball with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. So the Thunder made a trade. And as life happens, as you know, windows open and close, kind of funky. Look at the Dodgers yesterday. Injuries change sports teams. Best laid plans go to hell in a handbasket because of injuries in sports. Is that fair?
Yeah, I'm all good.
If Russell Westbrook doesn't tear his meniscus against the Rockets in a first-round series, the Thunder go back to the finals that year, and the narrative that it was the worst trade ever goes away. And hindsight being what it is, yes, trading James Harden was a mistake. But if the Thunder had known that there was not going to be a smoothing apparatus, they wouldn't have traded James Harden. They would have kept him and paid him and fit him in under the big salary cap thingy. Anyway, this podcast also brought to you by Lauren Valick Ferris with Briggs Freeman Sotheby's in Dallas. So if you're moving to or living in Dallas, looking to buy or sell a home in the Metroplex, give Lauren a call. She would love to help Rebel fans in Dallas or moving to Dallas sell their home or find and buy their new one. Lauren's consistently ranked as a top 10 agent producer in the Lakewood East Dallas area. So whether you're moving home, buying, selling, or referring a friend in one of the hottest housing and job markets in the country, give her a call, 469-867-1734. Check out her website, Lauren and Kelly. It's with an EY.com. Podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you're a business with a high-ticket product or service, Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application. With rates as low as 4.9%, terms that extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, and credit scores down to 580, they will get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben Brown at 443-935-5013. He's waiving the setup fee for Oxford Exxon podcast listeners. It's a $500 savings, so call him today.
Okay, you ready?
Tell me the great trades. Yeah.
You're already frustrated, and I haven't even told you.
It's just. The narrative is Russell takes bad shots. He does. He takes bad shots. But nobody was saying this about Russell Westbrook when Kevin Durant was leading the NBA in scoring year after year after year. And when the Thunder had a 9-point lead in Game 6 of the NBA Western Conference Finals, when Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook were god-awful in the fourth quarter. No one was saying these things. Anyway, go ahead.
All right, I'm going to read the first part of this to give a little bit of justification. I'm going to stop, let you comment, then I'll give you the trade, okay?
Okay.
So I'm going to set this up. Again, Jason McIntyre, the big lead.
Gotcha.
He's a clickbait artist, but I find this interesting nonetheless, so here we are.
Okay.
All right, he talks about salary caps and when they can actually trade him and all that stuff at the beginning. I'm skipping that. Doesn't really matter. They can't trade him until September the 28th, 2018 anyway. He's got a one-year clause, and from signing that deal, they can't trade him until then.
Okay.
But at 29, he's never developed a reliable three-point shot, and how many more years will he be able to win with his athleticism? We've seen Blake Griffin's athleticism wane. He's 5 months younger than Westbrook and also had more injuries. Griffin also never developed a reliable jump shot. OKC's likely going to try to another build around Westbrook, but options are limited. Paul George is leaving, potentially. They can't afford to keep Jeremy Grant. Is that how you pronounce that?
Yeah.
Okay. Carmelo Anthony is owed $27.8 million next year. Yes, GM Sam Presti did a nice job turning Oladipo and DeMontis Sabonis into Paul George last summer, but it ultimately failed because of Westbrook's inability to elevate others. And what could be the most amazing stat of his season, Westbrook set, quote, 24 ball screens combined in 86 games, according to ESPN's Zach Lowe. OKC is a team through 254 passes per game this season, second fewest in the NBA. Fans in OKC would love Westbrook and would be devastated if he left. Sam Presti will become a living 30-for-30 legend for trading Harden, losing Westbrook, and then trading Russell Westbrook. But this makes sense, colon. Any comments before I proceed?
Well, they are going to keep Jeremy Grant. The Carmelo deal
is what it is.
Is what it is. They knew that going in. They weren't the ones that gave him that money.
All right. The L.A. Clippers get Russell Westbrook, $35 million next year.
Okay. Yep.
The OKC Thunder, and again, on names, I'm not in a market where I have to know the NBA, so I don't.
It's okay. I can help you.
All right. Danilo Gallinari. Okay. Yeah. $21.5 million next year.
Yeah. Completely injury prone.
Tobias Harris, $14.8 million next year.
Yeah.
And the Clippers draft picks, 12 and 13 in 2018.
It's stupid.
He goes on to say the Clippers are rebuilding at a time when the Lakers are about to be an elite team. The Rams and Chargers are legitimate Super Bowl contenders.
How the hell are the Lakers about to be an elite team?
I'm reading Jason McIntyre. The Dodgers are coming off a World Series appearance, and LA has two pro soccer teams that are very good. The Clippers must add star power this offseason. The draft picks are the big win for the Thunder. It's feasible LA could land Alabama point guard Colin Sexton with one pick and shy somebody Alexander from Kentucky with the other. In the best case, this would have OKC looking like this after the trade: Adams, Gallinari, Harris, Terrence Ferguson, and Sexton, with a primary bench of Andre Roberson, whatever Alexander, Alex Abrines, Kyle Singler, Patrick Patterson. Assuming Gallo is healthy, you could probably win 30 to 35 games and pick in the lottery again.
Well, that part's true. They'd suck. Any other trades?
No, that was it.
Just the Clippers.
Yeah, just the Clippers. That was the one that made sense. He didn't need more. He found the one that.
That's insane.
Okay, I'm done. I'm just
idiotic. Tobias Harris? Stop.
I wouldn't know Tobias Harris if he walked in the room right now petting Gus.
It's insane. Just ludicrous. Look, the Thunder have issues. Yes, and they're clearly the situation with Carmelo was not as tenable as the media portrayed it to be during the course of the season, and who knows what's going to happen. Carmelo might actually walk away from $27 million and go to Cleveland on a new deal. This Paul George going to the Lakers thing as an afterthought, I'm telling you, I don't think it's happening. I think there's a better chance Paul George goes to three places than he goes to the Lakers. I think there's a better chance he stays in Oklahoma City. There's a better chance that he signs with Philadelphia and puts them over the top. Imagine Paul George on that team. And I think there's a better chance that Paul George basically does a sign and trade where he demands a trade to Cleveland, and Cleveland sends Kevin Love and something back to Oklahoma City. All three of those, in my eyes, are more likely than he goes out to Los Angeles as the first option on a team with Lonzo Ball and all those crazies. In L.A. at home, where every failure is put squarely on his shoulders.
This is not a shock whatsoever. The NFL will not eliminate kickoffs this season. Duh. Getting closer, not there yet. And just kind of looking at anything else.
Over under 5 years, kickoffs banned. Over under 5 years.
Under. 3 to 4 is my guess.
That's what I think, too.
It does not change the game to an amount that matters. So, yeah, I think that's an easy thing.
Yeah, fans will scream and yell. Media will scream and yell. And
for about a month. And then after that, who gives a crap?
Everybody will be like, you know what? Kickoffs, I really don't miss them that much.
We would lose the onside element to a game. A game would be over quicker.
Yeah, yeah.
That's substantial. Look, they're not successful, but it at least plays into what we know as football strategy.
Right.
So,
sure.
I get that. I get that being a weird thing, but you can't really move a lot of other rules to – like, you got to kind of just stop there and let it be what it is.
We'll adjust to no kickoffs quickly.
Yeah. It's not like we're taking away the forward pass here. I mean, it's going
to
be all right.
I think the adjustment to no kickoffs will end up being far more seamless than many will make it out to be.
There have been hundreds here, and I'm forgetting tons. But just on Vaught Hemingway's field, I've seen two people almost get killed on kickoffs, Dexter McCluster and Brian Kimbrough.
Yes.
So, I mean, Channing Ward hit Brian Kimbrough that day. And
the hardest I ever got hit in a football game was on a damn kickoff.
Yeah, I'm okay here. I remember
the hit, and I remember thinking, how the hell am I walking right now? Because I got blindsided on a kickoff at Ouachita High School.
There you go. More throughout the week here on the podcast. Check rebelgrove.com. We've got some recruiting. We've got some different things going up. Have baseball later. I'm not sure if we have a media op today or not. I know there's a game tomorrow, so we'll have one after that. Worst case. So anyway, we will be back tomorrow. Appreciate it.